Good evening and welcome to Plan Lehigh Valley, the WDIY program presented along with our partners from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. Let's first welcome our co-hosts, Becky Bradley, who is Executive Director, and Matt Assad, its Managing Director.
Oh, good evening.
Welcome back. Tonight, we're going to take a look at one of those issues that you barely notice until there's a problem. And when it comes to stormwater, those problems can be big, disastrous, and life-threatening. We're going to talk about the latest effort to develop a region-wide stormwater management plan at a time when our storms are becoming more extreme and the region is seeing more development. Joining us is Lehigh Valley Planning Commission Director of Environmental Planning, Susan Myrov. Few people in the state know more about watershed management. Susan arrived at the Planning Commission in November with more than 30 years of dedication to protecting our environment. She's one of the state's leading experts in watershed planning and protection. She spent 10 years as Watersheds Program Director for the Pennsylvania Environmental Council, and before that was a senior planner for the Heritage Conservancy. At the LVPC, she's directing the region's first ever Regional Climate Action Plan and an ambitious update to the Valley's 15 watershed stormwater management plans, along with a long list of other duties aimed at protecting the region's environment. Matt, we're going to get started with you. How is it that we're spending a whole show talking about stormwater?
That's a good question. So stormwater is just one of those things you really don't give a second thought to. You know, it's that trickle of water running under your tires and into the storm sewer. It's nothing to worry about until there's a really big heavy rain. Then all of a sudden you have flooding, you have property damage, you have closed businesses, you got drinking water that's contaminated, and whatever other havoc that rushing water creates in the community. So that's where stormwater management comes in. We have just started an update of the stormwater management plans for all 15 Lehigh Valley watersheds, and some of them are dating back to the 80s and 90s. So since then, we have had a lot of development. The landscape of the Lehigh Valley has changed significantly. We have a lot more impervious ground. So that changes the path of the watersheds and how they drain. So there's a lot to consider as we do this update. And as such, we have a lot to talk about over the next 25 minutes.
All right. So, Becky, why don't you tell us why it's important to every person who lives in the Lehigh Valley?
Obviously, no one wants to be flooded out or have unclean drinking water, right? And Susan, I think, said it the best to me not too long ago. She said it's kind of like trash. It just goes away and you don't really know where it goes and you don't necessarily think about it until it's a problem, right? And so we really have to think about our stormwater in that regard too. But it's much more than that, really. It's an opportunity for us to look at how we use land and how we protect our steep slopes and how we protect our water courses and how we manage what everyone here in the Valley calls our quality of life. Really, people are referring to our environment matched up with jobs and the economy, quality and affordable housing. And so, you know, it's one of those legs of the stool. And this is a key component of that, especially in such a water rich area.
So as Matt said, it's probably not an issue people think about a lot until it's affecting them directly, but it's certainly not new to the Planning Commission, is it?
In fact, we've been working on this issue really since the 1970s when the Commonwealth started adopting regulations related to stormwater management. And then they required county planning agencies like we are for Northampton and Lehigh counties to be the coordinator, collaborator, and manager of the stormwater management plans. So we have 15 of them, and with those comes an ordinance as well. We like to refer to it as a more of a green infrastructure ordinance. And so we're going to be updating that as well. And then that'll get adopted by both of the counties and all 62 of our municipalities. But as you can see, like having 15 major watersheds in our region, plus an additional start northern segment of another one that goes into Bucks County, which makes the 16th, but that Bucks is responsible, Bucks and Montgomery are working on with us and Berks, you know, that can be complicated and take a lot of time to create and manage those plans. So that's why we're going to be working on an innovative new version of that.
Which is the single plan that you're talking about rather than 15 separate plans.
Correct. And by the way, this is like cutting edge stuff, right? It makes sense from a logical perspective that you wouldn't take 2 years on every plan. I mean, we've been working on this forever, right? So we'd have the next several decades of work cut out for us. But the need with our growth and having added over 150,000 new people, you know, in the last, you know, 30 years or so, and we're going to continue to grow that much, we don't have that kind of time. And so doing a global plan, first of all, makes a one-stop shop. So it's a lot easier for people to get an understanding of the whole set of water management issues that we have in the Lehigh Valley and moves more towards a system of integrated water resource management. This is a component of that. And then it does allow us to create a region-wide green infrastructure ordinance. So that provides everything from consistency and efficiency when developers propose new plans, because they should get to an answer as quickly as possible, right? When they put in application. And it provides our governments, our local governments, with more consistency across their work as well, because we know our watersheds, just like our road system, just like the Eagles, they don't stay in one community. Things transcend those municipal boundaries or county boundaries. And so it's an opportunity for us to coordinate all of that in a way that protects our water and helps to improve it over the long haul.
Now, when you're talking about a single global plan, aren't there different issues in each of these watersheds that wouldn't maybe be addressed by the global plan?
Oh, no. I mean, of course, there's different issues. And the beauty of it is that we'll be able to look at those issues in each of the watersheds and put them together, almost like a chapter of a book.
Right.
Yeah. And then we're going to find commonalities between the different watersheds. And then that'll help us, again, support a more consistent application of management for the water system overall. I know Susan probably has a lot of thoughts on that, too.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's an ordinance for stormwater management includes a lot of different standards and criteria. So we're going to be looking at how we apply those across our different watersheds based on their unique circumstances or unique land patterns and land cover. So, but the ordinances, what we mean by being more standardized and consistent is that we want to make sure that all of our communities understand the types of measures that we want to propose to manage stormwater across these different regions. So we look at them as separate in terms of how we're going to develop these standards, but then as a sort of a whole region, the approaches will be similar.
Yeah. And true. The other thing is it's not as difficult as people think to create if-then statements inside a regulatory document. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you have this condition, here's a potential set of solutions. And then that provides flexibility when watersheds change and between updates as well, because it gives you a broader set of acceptable measures. And I think that's a key component, too, because I think the one thing that we all know is when you have a lot of growth, we're all seeing it everywhere we go. When you have a lot of growth, the issues of growth are going to vary. However, the solutions really have to vary to meet that challenge. But then as growth comes after growth comes after growth, those things that may be more applicable to an urbanized area in a certain condition now become applicable in what used to be a lower density suburban community that's now become a higher density suburban community. So that flexibility is something that a global approach to this also provides us. It allows us to sit down and say, there are if-then scenarios, and here are potential solutions based on the form now, but what it could be in the future.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So, Susan, when you say we have 15 watersheds, what does that mean?
Yeah, it's an interesting term. Go back to basics here. Watershed is actually an area of land that drains to a single low point. And most of those low points are typically streams and creeks and rivers eventually. And so watershed is an area of land. And that's a critical kind of understanding with respect to the way that stormwater runs off that land. But here we have 15 because when the state developed its stormwater management regulations back in 1978, they were authorized to designate these different watershed areas for the counties, who were then given the responsibility to develop plans based on those areas. And these drainage areas, if you can imagine a tree and you have the big trunk and then all the little branches, that's how watersheds are kind of formed. It's all about the topography of the land. And so you have areas that can be as small as a couple of square miles to something that could be thousands of square miles, like the Delaware River Basin, of which we all live here in this region. That's 13,000 square miles. So in watershed and stormwater management planning, especially, we have to be at a little bit smaller area than that. That's a bit big. So typically we're in an area of about between 30 and maybe 100 square mile drainage area. So that's how the 15 watersheds were developed, based on topography, based on some other criteria. And those are the way that we look at and manage stormwater in that sort of area. In the valley, you know, you have the Bushkill, and then we have the Jordan and the Little Lehigh Creek and the Perkiomen Creek headwaters, just many. I always ask people if they actually know which watershed they live in, and it's a good idea to know that, because then there's, you know, you can understand how you're actually impacting that particular area or that particular creek that's right in your neighborhood.
Yeah, I can say I certainly do not know what watershed I'm in.
Then you have to love it.
There's my homework.
Yeah, it's on our website. Yep. There's a beautiful map that Mackenzie Geisner, our GIS planner, created. And you can click on it and it shows you, you know, the different municipal boundaries and the watersheds, and also takes you to the current watershed plan. So you can look at some of that, and it's really interesting. So lvpc.org.
Okay. So Susan, is there a difference in the way we handle this issue today than when the way we did 30 or 40 years ago?
When they first created the regulation, you could bump back in the 70s. Of course, that's the era of incredible environmental legislation, Clean Water Act, for example, Clean Air Act. Those all came out sort of in that same era. And the state of Pennsylvania was pretty forward thinking, and they developed this program to manage watersheds, but it was mainly to address flooding issues. So it was primarily focused on managing large storms, the storms that you may think would create a flooding problem. So you may know the term 100-year storm or something like that, or, you know, we get hurricanes and tropical storms and they're producing lots and lots of water. And it was overwhelming our landscapes and our ability for the land to absorb the water. So there was this regulation was pretty forward thinking and say, hey, we have to manage this. And Pennsylvania is a state that relies on local land use control, and land use is absolutely linked to how much stormwater is produced. So how we make those decisions is so critical in how much stormwater is produced in a particular area. So it was pretty forward thinking for the state to require these management plans to be on a watershed level, because our water doesn't really respect political boundaries. So it's really important way for us to look at this issue from a really more of an environmental and scientific way. And so that's when, if you do go on that map that Becky just mentioned, you'll see that some of our municipalities have intersect with several different watersheds, because that's the way the water is flowing over their landscape. So yeah, the way we managed it back then was just to manage those high storms, try to make sure that we were cutting off the peak. And then we learned later, though, that because we were only managing like these big storms, we weren't really capturing pollution very well, because those are usually generated in a smaller storm event. So if you think of a rainstorm, and it's just one of those rainstorm that you would get every day, let's say, not a huge storm, that water is going to fall on the land, or it's going to fall on a surface, and it's going to run off, and it's going to pick up whatever happens to be on that land. And that first kind of inch of water, or second or 2 inches of water, is what picks up all the pollution or the potential pollution that can get into our streams. Most stormwater runs through a series of infrastructure that goes directly to our streams and creeks. It's not going through a treatment plant to be treated. So it's much different, and it's separate from what you might consider, other types of wastewater that goes to a treatment plant. Yeah, so we had discovered that we were managing all the, for the peak flows and for these major storms, which is very critical because it helps prevent flooding and prevent, you know, the loss of life and loss of property that Matt had referred to. But then we discovered if we manage those small storms too, we would be able to really prevent a big portion or a big significant portion of the pollution from getting into our streams. So that's the difference now. We manage for both types of storms.
Okay, so what does the LVPC have to do to put this plan together? What is that going to look like? What's going to happen over the next 2 years?
I'll try to be briefer in this response. So we have a lot to do. We've actually started. One of the major things that we have to do, and it is so critical, is to work with our 62 municipalities that make up our two counties. And they are important. We have a committee that we're facilitating through our workshop LV water format. And they will be providing information to us to let us know what has been happening in their communities. We will be looking for specific lists of problem areas. We also do a lot of data collection. We have to update these plans that were done some over 30 years ago. So we're going to look at new land use, new land cover. We're going to look at what has already been put in place, stormwater measures that are already in place. We're going to look at where does the flooding occur. We're going to be looking at information from our emergency management folks and also from the Army Corps of Engineers, who maintain a lot of information about infrastructure such as dams and things that manage our bigger water systems. So we have a lot of data collection. We've already started. We've had two meetings already on our workshop LV water to introduce everyone and get them on board. We have a lot of work to do. And the way that we're going to evaluate our watersheds after we gather this information is to use modeling. And that's where we are able to look at how the water actually flows through a whole system based on the type of rainfall event. So we're going to look at storms that are have a lot of water and some that are smaller. And we basically have these models that help us understand how long it takes for that water to run through the whole system. And that allows us to then produce things like how much water do we maybe have to hold back for a certain amount of time at the top of a watershed so that the folks on the bottom of the watershed don't get inundated with water coming in too quickly. That's a challenge for us. We're going to be looking at updating all of those areas, comparing what we know already from our existing plans, and then updating it with lots of new data and looking at these models to help us understand what actually is happening.
And once we have an updated plan, what's the result? What are you hoping it leads to?
As Becky had mentioned, one of the things that comes from an Act 167 plan, no matter if you're doing 1 or 15, is an ordinance. And that ordinance will help, will be for our municipalities to put in place some of these standards to help manage the runoff as it's occurring. So we will be looking for this sort of one ordinance that has consistency throughout the entire valley. That's our biggest output. But I think also just the getting our municipalities together, really understanding some of their issues. We're going to ask them, how do you think that your ordinances are doing now? What things are we not looking at? What things are important to you? So this is a process for us as the regional planning agency to understand what is happening and how we can use our land use controls, which are our zoning and our ordinances, to help mitigate some of those impacts.
And when you talk about the ordinance, this is something that has to be followed by every single developer and development that goes.
Correct.
Yeah. So it's almost immediately goes into effect and almost immediately has impact because a development gets in and now they have to follow that new role. They have to follow the new regulations. It's not something that takes decades and decades. It's kind of starts right away once you have it.
I think another thing, kind of building off a comment that Susan had made too, is the fact that we see it time and time again, but when our community's in the same room together, they really start to realize that they have common issues and that they can actually have different solutions, and what may have worked in one community could work in another, and they're able to have that culture of sharing, which allows them to be more effective too, and not to have to consistently reinvent the wheel. So there's a lot of collaboration that'll be part of this that has some of those qualitative benefits, so to speak, that carry beyond the effort. And it's targeted around a specific subject area, which is a difficult subject area, you know, kind of where we started. Well, what is this anyway, right? And it's referred to as Act 167. You know, well, what the heck is Act 167? And I think a lot of that is also like, how does the group want to talk about it? I mean, it really is around a very important law, as Susan underscored beautifully. But, you know, when you go out to the public overall, they need to understand what that is. And so, you know, building that common dictionary and that common language, as well as understanding those common issues, is important as part of this as well.
So, Susan, can you give people a good example of stormwater management at work? Any particular projects that would help people visualize what we're talking about?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's so many different levels of this. So I'll go with a residential example, because most people may not understand that they can actually manage stormwater right on their own properties. I myself have three rain barrels, which is just a device that actually captures the water running right off your roof. And you can reuse it, and it's not drinkable, but you can reuse it for lots of other stuff. The other things that most people may be familiar with are things called rain gardens. And these are areas that are depressed and designed, sorry, they're not depressed because they're sad. You design them to capture, again, rainfall or runoff in a kind of a basin area, but it has specialized vegetation and plants, and it's designed to actually capture the water and filter it through the vegetation. And that means it's cleaning it, and it's also, it looks nice. That's a technique that we use to manage stormwater basically where it falls, which is a really important component. So that's kind of things I think people are familiar with.
And every office building that has a pond in front of it, that's stormwater management. They're not doing that because it looks pretty. They're doing that because they're required.
Right.
And hopefully because it looks pretty.
Right.
Some of them don't look pretty.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's another whole show. Like you probably have seen those giant, you know, craters, the detention basins that are mowed. Those were the things that were absolutely correct in being developed earlier when we were managing those large storms, because they were designed to, you know, capture all that excess water and then release it slowly so that people weren't getting flooded. Those basins, though, now are being retrofitted and redesigned to also manage small storms. So you may see them with lots of plants now and pretty flowers. You probably see a lot of stormwater management features. I mean, you may not realize it when you're driving around. So yeah, look out for those basins and the little rain gardens and meadows and all kinds of things that we're using now to manage our water where it falls, so it doesn't inundate our infrastructure or our incredible streams and creeks that we have here in the valley.
I'm glad you mentioned the basins, because I was visualizing an entrance ramp area to 22 that I drive by every day. And I've looked at that mowed grass and thought, can't we do something better here? So maybe that's in the works.
Yeah, I mean, we're hoping so. And you know what the cool thing about this is too, is you could go right now to Future LV, the regional plan, again at lvpc.org. And there's some really cool renderings of how we could even make our roadways greener. And that's a method of stormwater management, right? And we basically took the ideas, and this was back in, you know, 2018, 2019, and took the ideas that people were talking to us about, you know, helping reduce flooding, helping to have cleaner water, cleaner air. And we just rendered them out in real places. And, you know, how instead of having those detention basins, you could have some, you know, really cool ponds that could help support wildlife habitat and other things. And you can see those potential futures in the plan now. And so now this plan would be a specific subset of that that would actually then support implementation of that. And so we're basically taking what the community and our local governments told us all those years ago, and then turning it into specific work, data-based, obviously science-based work that then ties back into that qualitative work that we did with the regional plan. So it's even more exciting, in addition to meeting all kinds of climate goals that we have other environmental goals that we have for ourselves.
Lots of overlap.
Now, Becky, many of the green infrastructure innovations we talked about don't come cheap, or they would be done already in some respects. So how does this get funded?
Sure. Sure. And I really want to give a great thank you to the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection. They are a very, very important partner in all of this, along with Lehigh and Northampton counties. And again, they're also financial partners, but then again, our local governments. So really, we've been working through a series of grant opportunities that have just become available. And again, I should give a shout out to the Pennsylvania legislature and the governor's office as well for continuing to support implementation of the laws that they've adopted. So they've seeded the funding for this effort. And that's how we're going to get the global plan done. And that's very important. The other component of this is a lot of our local governments have these municipal separate storm sewer, or what everyone calls MS4. I know, another acronym or term that people are like, what's that? But it's super duper costly for our local governments to comply with that. This helps them comply with that and helps reduce their costs. So there's just kind of a little fact related to the cost of stormwater management and why this plan can help reduce those costs to the taxpayers and to even to developers. So there's 98 municipalities statewide, including three in the Lehigh Valley. That's Bethlehem Township, with the three cities, Bethlehem Township, Fountain Hill, and Palmer Township, that have adopted stormwater management fees that collects money from residents, businesses, and institutions based on the amount of runoff they generate from their buildings and parking lots. The money can be used to install stormwater management measures, such as repairing existing infrastructure or adding rain gardens and bioswales and green roofs and riparian buffers. The reason those communities adopted those fees is because the cost of that municipal separate storm sewer compliance is so very high. So anything we can do to support installation of green infrastructure when new development or substantial changes to developed areas is proposed should help reduce that burden, that financial burden for implementation. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons, even financial reasons to do this, the dovetailing of different laws and how we can potentially leverage that into savings that I think becomes the more business side of the reason to work on a project like this.
Now, Becky, as we close the show, can you tell people how they can be involved in this process?
Yes, there's a lady on this program called Susan Myroff, and you can contact her at our office. And she is the guru of the Act 167 Stormwater Management Project. And seriously, she's wonderful, as you can tell, and she can help you because we're going to have a lot more of these workshop meetings that she mentioned. And one thing, too, I think is very important, and this is a testament to the commissioners at the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission over time, is they have a commitment to the involvement of the community. So the workshop LV format is basically a build a bigger table model. So sure, you know, local governments are going to be there. That's key to them being compliant with their obligations under the law. But anybody can come to those meetings and is welcome to come to those meetings and has an equal seat at the table. And so that idea of equitable communication and equitable involvement is key to this. And Susan can get you connected to those upcoming workshops. I think we're in the process of scheduling the next round of them. Mm-hmm. Susan's got that survey about to launch to our local governments to start get feedback on those problem areas. And then I know she'll get the band back together as soon as that comes in.
And by the way, I'd like to note that we blew through 30 plus minutes and Susan's got a stack of stuff here that she didn't even get a chance to lay on you.
Oh, so there's these guys know me that
he's a legit expert.
I go into the rabbit hole of stormwater, but yeah, it's fascinating to me. Not too much there. Everybody else, but I like it. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we have somebody who is caring about this important issue. And as Matt said, we did spend an entire 30 minutes talking about stormwater. So I want to thank our guest this evening, Susan, as well as Becky Bradley and Matt Assad, as always. If you would like to listen to this program again, please go to wdiy.org or our app or your favorite podcast platform. I'm your host, Margaret McConnell, and you're listening to WDIY 88.1. Good night.